This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
We're back into the morning shift. Abe Gordon, Bo Squidbilly Morgan hanging out with you as we start. Wow, it's already 2 hours down, our final hour. A lot of college football, a little bit of Week 18, Falcons and Saints, a couple other games of note dancing around as well. But certainly the focus here is going to be on the Saints on Sunday, and looking forward to that. Also looking forward to the Hawks, who are finally got a win in December there. Kristaps Porzingis returns and helps the Hawks to victory. They are back at it tonight here, so they're at Madison Square Garden against the New York Knicks. I'm going to be hosting a watch party at the Harvey in Chamblee. So if you want to come out and join me at the Harvey in Chamblee tonight, starting at 7:30, we'll have some cool stuff. Some Hawks prizes, including an opportunity to get tickets to a future game. So that's what's going on. The Hawks actually have a back-to-back coming tonight, and then tomorrow they north of the border in Toronto.
You ever been to Toronto?
I have, but it's been a long time.
Yeah,
I was young.
Oh, okay. How young?
Like a kid.
You can't enjoy it.
Toronto, I mean, I enjoyed it, but probably not whichever manner you're headed towards.
I went there in 13. Toronto is a fun city to go out in. Like, it really is. Like, genuinely, it's a really good time. It's kind of it reminds me a little bit of New York, but obviously smaller.
Yeah, because I don't enjoy New York that much.
Why?
It's just, there's too much going on. It's a little too much.
Too busy for you?
Yeah, I've lived in Washington, D.C. I've lived in Los Angeles. I think those cities have been fine. I don't think I would want to live like in Chicago, and I don't think I would want to deal with New York. Like proper New York. Like Manhattan, New York.
No, I wouldn't either. I would live in Jersey City.
But I don't even want to like have to deal with working in proper New York.
No, I don't want any of that. I'm very much fine with Atlanta, or
I think I'd be okay pretty much every other city, but I will pass on Chicago and I will pass on New York City.
Chicago's really fun. Like, the problem is both those cities are fun to visit and not live in for me. Like, I'm with you on not wanting to live there. I think it'd be miserable. I'd be miserable not being able to drive to work. Or walking distance type thing.
When I lived in D.C., I took Metro. So, like, I think dealing with, like, the system in New York would be all right. And they got the L in Chicago, right?
Yeah, I've ridden that. Ridden the subway.
There's too many people.
There is,
man.
Too many people.
There's too many people.
I can't. We sound like two curmudgeons on the air.
Starting to get there here. You know what I'm talking about?
I mean, it's been busy here.
I know. I'm just kidding.
That's why I like, dude. I love working mornings. Absolutely love it. I know it sucks waking up early. You get your day started, but driving in when there's nobody, on the road, and then driving home when there's traffic, but you're gonna hit it like once every blue moon, you know. Which I mean, I'll hit it on the way home. It'll be some kind of random thing. It's really, really nice. It's pretty good. Don't forget calls for the wake up call at 404-726-0929 for tell us what you think about the UGA game. Who are you blaming? I've seen people say Kirby is 100% to blame. I've also seen people blame Mike Bobo. I really haven't seen a lot of people blame Glenn Schumann, which is a little bit surprising because he was kind of the guy that everyone pinpointed early in the season. And considering the Ole Miss put up 37 points on a much improved defense, it's surprising. It's not for me because you still blew a
Yeah, yeah, sure.
I say blue. You still gave up a lead.
It's the first time in 76 games that Georgia lost while leading entering the fourth quarter.
Well, Kirby was 53-0 at halftime is a stat.
That too.
You had a 21-12 lead at one point. Basically, you allowed Ole Miss to score 25 points in the second half. I don't count the safety. See, to me, that the final score, in my mind, the final score was 37-34. Because it's
factually incorrect.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is factually incorrect. But that is what your defense gave up. Your defense didn't give up the 2-point safety, just like Ole Miss. Their defense technically only gave up 27 points.
Right.
Whether you like it or not, look, the play that Trinidad Chambliss and Kewan Lacy make in the second half, where Chambliss is flush, he rolls around, actually evades the all 22 camera, the sky camera, whatever they want to call it, the sky camera that the ESPN has. He evades it to the point where he runs out of the sight of it, and then he whips back in. Two things. Should there have been a blindside block on the Ole Miss offensive lineman who hits the UGA defender as he's running up? Should that have been a blindside? Like, in the rule, again, now this is where we get semantic-y. Rule of the law, probably. But he pulled up on
Not enough force.
He pulled up on him, which hear me out. Hear me out. I want to hear you. I know, Garrett, you work on college football game time as well, and I really want to hear your opinion, but hear me out. The spirit of that rule is...
Spirit of that rule is to avoid decleaters.
Is a crackback block.
Yeah. Total decleaters,
and
which this was
do
not.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's something I saw in the moment. Like, while the play was happening, I'm like, oh, that's an illegal blindside block. And then just nothing came of it. But you show the replay, and you're correct. I mean, when you get into it, the offensive lineman throws his hands up and then, like, throws his body into it. It's a very common... You see that in basketball all the time. But... It's not. It's something that I'm completely fine with him not calling, but it's something that I could have seen made justification for throwing the flag.
The other clarification on this play is that, yes, I know it was only a 4-yard gain. It was about avoiding a 17-yard loss.
Yeah, but
that is much more impactful.
Well, they got a first down off of it.
Right.
Now, that's the point. Next point. Were you more upset with the non-call on the blind side, or crackback, whatever you want to call it, or the fact that the UGA player, number 4, I can't remember his name, came in more for the hard hit on Lacy than wrapping up and securing the tackle? Because to me, that's where the play was made. I mean, that was the icing on top of the play, because Chambliss gets out of his hands. You don't have the big loss, but also you get a first down off of that because of the hard running of Kewan Lacy.
Yeah. I mean, look, he's been one of the better running backs in the country all year long. So, Again, I think you got to pay a little bit of respect to what Ole Miss was able to do as opposed to just blame the Georgia Bulldogs. That was a good game yesterday, and Georgia was competitive in a game they ultimately lost. Do you think there were moments where they probably should have won that game? Yes, absolutely. A lot of times, maybe they do. Yesterday was a time in which they didn't. Not everything's going to go their way every single time out, and I think that's okay. One of the other questions we're getting, we can answer this later if you want. Like, is this a failed season? Like, is that the discussion we're having?
With
Georgia,
you won an SEC title. You made it to the quarterfinals of the college football playoffs. If the only thing you judge by are national championships, then sure. But that doesn't mean it's a failed season because the program has not taken a step back. Had the program taken a step back, that would be a failed.
If the only way that your season success is a title, you're going to have a lot of failed seasons.
Then everything.
Being realistic.
Yeah, you had 40 of them in a row. All right, let's get to the phone lines real quick. We got a couple of calls. I kind of want to get to them. Let's get to Carl in Carrollton. Carl, you're on the wake-up call, the morning shift. What do you got for us?
Good morning. I'm just really upset because I know we had a first down and 10 on the 3-yard line of Ole Miss. And Gunnar Stockton had already run the ball and scored 2 times on the rush of the ball in the end zone. And whoever called that play for the first and 10 on the 3-yard line to do a shotgun and then toss the ball back 5 more yards to whoever that was running back, and they stopped us on the 6-yard line, that was Mike Bobo. He's the one that blamed to lose that game. They should have let Gunnar Stockton just run it in the 3-yard line. and be on the center, we'd have won the game. It'd been a touchdown. We had a 4-point lead, and the game'd be over. That's all I got to say.
Appreciate it, Carl.
Look, I without having watched the All-22, I don't think it's ever fair to just blame a play call without seeing how it was executed.
Yeah.
Let's look at whether guys missed blocks. I mean, because they're again, this goes back to like the Ohio State pick six for Miami.
Oh, yeah, Jeremiah Smith.
You miss a block. Is it on saying? Is it on a play call? You know, so I remember the play. I know a lot of people were just like, Carson Beck. Gunnar Stockton, we had just talked Miami. Gunnar Stockton's going to run it the next three plays, and then you'll see what happened. Like, no, they made a call, but it's tough to just blame a play call blindly without going back, studying the execution. I think too many people do that.
Yeah, I think it's a very good point. I would love to add to it, but I do want to get one more call in here with Cameron from Woodstock. But that's a really good call. Cameron, you're on the wake-up call of the morning shift. What do you got for us, man?
Morning, fellas. Happy New Year. I got to shout out my dog, Mike's Mafia. You know how we rolling.
You know what, Cameron?
Is that how that goes?
I don't even know why I got your call. No, I'm just kidding, man. What do you got for us, brother? Appreciate you.
I know. You know how football, bro. It's a team game, so I have to blame kind of everybody, especially the head of the snake, Kirby Smart. Those last, like, you know, that last offensive and defensive possession was kind of some of the worst, I don't know, just coaching moments. I think they should have ran more plays for Gunner or Zachariah Branch in the red zone. As well as on defense, why do we have our corners pressed up with 30 seconds left on, or 50 seconds left on the clock? They could have played smarter, safer, and even ran the clock down more when they had the ball on offense in the red zone before they had to kick the field goal.
Yeah.
Let me know what y'all think, though. Y'all have a good one.
I don't think you
appreciate
can argue the run the clock down. You got to score.
Well,
and they had timeouts.
Well, in that third down play call inside the red area, right there inside on the goal to go, that was absolutely – or the second down one. That was absolutely trying to run it down.
Right, and you had forced them to use all their timeouts.
Yeah.
Look, I will say this, and again, I don't know if it's a defensive play call. I'd have to go back and look at the execution. You can never, in that circumstance, ever let a guy get behind you when the only thing that beats you is a deep ball. It can't happen. That guy's got to be in front of you.
I tend to agree. Hey, Abe, want to go to the Atlanta Boat Show?
I do.
All right, we'll be caller, let's get caller 9 right now at 404-726-0929. You'll get a chance to win a 4-pack of tickets to the Discover Boating Atlanta Boat Show in partnership with Progressive Insurance at the Georgia World Congress Center from January 8th through the 11th. These tickets are provided by the Discover Boating Atlanta Boat Show in partnership with Progressive Insurance. You'll automatically qualify for the January 8th Cornhole Tournament for a chance to win tickets to the big game on January 9th. To purchase tickets, you can go to atlantaboatshow.com. If you want a chance to win, call now and be caller number 9 at 404-726-0929. Coming next, Atlanta Falcons radio analyst, my good friend Dave Archer, will join us to talk about Falcons Saints. You know what? Archer's a college football guy, too. We'll ask him about some of those playoff games as well. All the morning shift. Sports Radio 929 The Game. And don't forget, John Foy brings you this hour, the strong arm of the law.
So here's the thing with homemade meals. Eating them is great, but all the chopping and measuring and cleanup, not so much. With new one-pan assemble and bake meals from Blue Apron, you get all the flavor of homemade meals with a fraction of the work. Just assemble the pre-chopped ingredients, bake in the oven, and enjoy. Shop Assemble and Bake at BlueApron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
8:23 on a Friday. This is the Morning Shift. I am Bo Morgan, joined by Abraham Abe Gordon. And we are now joined, Abe, by my friend, I claim him as my friend sometimes, radio analyst for the Atlanta Falcons, former Atlanta Falcons quarterback, Dave Archer. Arch, dude, I mean, I know we got to talk Falcons, but you want to talk a little college football first and what happened last night with Georgia and Ole Miss? And why are you arguing with me on Twitter?
Just sometimes you say some weird stuff, so sometimes I just got to throw some stuff out there at you, you know. So,
Arch actually for the first time ever like replied to me on Twitter about I was giving Big Ten fans some crap because you know they pile jumped the SEC. Hey, what did you think of Trinidad Shambliss last night against the Georgia defense? You know, a lot of people are blaming Kirby, people are blaming Bobo, but got to give Ole Miss Charlie Weiss Jr. and that crew a little bit of credit, don't you?
Yeah, they did a good job. They had a good plan coming in, and I think that they felt like they had left some stuff on the table in the first game. I think they felt like obviously they let it get away from them. They played really well against Georgia and Athens early on in the year, and it got away from them in the fourth quarter. He didn't play very well in the fourth quarter of that game. He took that on himself. I think there's a lot of conversation about it that the Sean McDonough and they talked about how he had taken that on himself, that he had felt like he'd let the team down and that he had not played the capabilities that he'd shown early on. And he played great in the game last night. Obviously, in the second half, he was phenomenal. And Georgia, you know, one of the things that has affected Georgia from time to time is the ability for a quarterback to move around. And he was able to move around and buy time. And his receiver core was unbelievable. They came up with some huge plays for him as well. And then I thought their defensive front changed the tempo of the game in the second half. Their defensive front controlled the line of scrimmage. Georgia pushed them around some in the run game, kind of got some footing in the run game, and then all of a sudden they shut the door on that. And Georgia didn't have any answers. I think, you know, Gunner, I love the moxie he plays with and stuff, but I didn't think he played very well for about a quarter and a half in the second half. And I think that some of his decision-making, where he was throwing the ball, stuff like that, just wasn't good enough. And Ole Miss gets to move on.
Dave Archer presented by John Foyne Associates. Experienced personal injury attorneys get the strong arm. One more college question for you here, Arch. And Georgia, Texas Tech, Ohio State all came off byes, all being sent home. Last year it was 0-4 teams on a bye, so with Indiana being the only one now, 1-7 over the past two seasons. Do you buy into the bye week rest versus rust, or is that too small sample size and it just happens to be a coincidental number?
No, I think that there's enough sample size, Abe, that there's something to it that you lay off that long. I think there's, you know, you've got to have a really mature team that knows how to handle it. Dignetti's team is, you know, the island of misfit toys to a certain extent. It's guys that have been other places that didn't get recruited very well, and he brought this group of players in, and he's galvanized those guys together. And it's an older group that understand, you know, all for one, one for all. And I think to a large extent, most guys do understand that, but it becomes paramount that is your mission statement when you have these moments where you certainly need to lean into, are we preparing the best we can? Are we paying attention to things we need to pay attention to? And the guy that's usually pretty good about that is Kirby Smart. And I thought Georgia was ready to play. There's no question about that. So I don't think that there was necessarily a rust factor with Georgia, but certainly I think there's something to that. I think that you've got enough that you can lean into it and say, okay, are we putting these teams that have these bye weeks at a disadvantage, even though we think we're giving them an advantage by sitting at home? So I think they'll look at it.
Dave Archer joining us here on the Morning Shift. Arch, let's go ahead and transition to the Falcons Saints. And we saw Tyler Shuck in his, I believe, third start of his career. He's now going to make his ninth start against us. And he's gotten better. He's absolutely gotten better. He's now in the candidate for Rookie of the Year. Why? I know you watched him on film before the first game with them, and I know that you've probably watched some here now. What have you seen differently in his game? What is he doing better? What's the difference in the quarterback we're playing from the first time?
Well, it's just he's gotten a chance to play at this level. I talk about this all the time. As quarterback, especially, you've got to find out what you can get away with and what you can't. Are there things that he was able to do at the college level that, hey, I just can't do that here? I think that he's learned that probably quicker than a lot of guys. And he's done played really well the last couple of weeks. Obviously, they're on a four-game streak, but his play has been really good the last couple of weeks. Over 300 yards passing the last couple of weeks. Now, Chris Olave is going to be out. That's a guy that he's really developed a tremendous synergy with. So it'll be interesting to see who steps up, because they're you know, talk about a group at running back. You'd have to go back and look, pull up the bios on all the players that are playing running back, because you don't know who they are unless you're a hardened fan. So that's normally what they lean into with a young quarterback, is you want to be able to run the football some. They have not been able to do that to a large extent all year long. I mean, they're almost last. I think they're last in the league, or in the top bottom three of the league in running the football. So they've really leaned into the young quarterback. And the offensive line has played pretty solid over the last couple of weeks. I just think that he's learning how to play at this level.
Arch, Bijan Robinson obviously has had an outstanding year. He's within, albeit a little bit of a stretch, he's within reach of some all-time NFL records. But I almost wonder, to an extent, and I know he got Player of the Week, and he also did that in Week 6, to an extent, is the season that he's had not being appreciated enough outside of Atlanta?
Yeah, I don't know, Abe. I don't know what I think there's a lot of people talking about him. I saw a lot of people on social media talking about him. I think that his play in primetime games has maybe superseded the fact that the Falcons aren't in the playoffs or making some kind of run here late to be a part of the playoffs. His two big games, obviously the games on Monday night, have been phenomenal. And I think that people understand who he is and what he's doing. Certainly in this last game, I thought that there was a lot of conversation about him. The numbers, say what you want to about the numbers. I think some people are okay about the numbers. Some people think that, how do you compare numbers when eras are different and those kind of things. You know, William Andrews is the guy's record who he broke. William played, obviously one less game per season than he's playing now. And so is there something to that? But it doesn't take away the fact that Bijan Robinson, there's a brilliance to Bijan Robinson. I talked about it on the podcast. You can talk about, the greatest artists or the greatest comedians, actors. There's a genius to some of those people that nobody can really understand or explain. I think Bijan Robinson is in that realm. The greatest running back I've ever seen play the game, I still think he's the greatest running back of all time, is Walter Payton. Walter could do everything well. He could run with power. He could run with speed, catch the football. He would just destroy linebackers on blitzes that would come. And Bijan Robinson does all of those things. And so I think the one thing that maybe, to your point, Abe, that they're not appreciating is that how good he is at everything. Catching the football, run it with speed, make you miss, run with power, block. He does everything well. He's the best running back in the league doing everything. And it's fun. He's our guy. And Atlanta fans take advantage of it. You're seeing one of the best that can play the game.
Arch, how much credit should we give Jesse Bates for the progression of Xavier Watts? I mean, Xavier Watts was a ball hawk out of college. I think he had 13 interceptions his last two seasons at Notre Dame. But now he's got 5 in the NFL. And we, you and I get a chance to do the games, and we're sitting up there. And it feels like after a lot of plays, whether it's good or bad, you see Jesse talking to him. Should we give a little bit of credit towards Jesse Bates for helping mentor him and helping him progress to the game? Because one of those interceptions, the second interception, almost felt like Xavier Watts just gambled on what he thought he saw.
Well, you got to give a lot of it, Bo, and it's a good point. But you got to give a lot of the credit to Jesse Bates and how Jesse's mentored him. They're very like-minded players. They're not overly demonstrative. They're not guys that are pounding their chest or beating on other guys or anything like that. They're self-motivated. They're extremely good athletes, one. But two, they think about the game. They see the game kind of in the same prism. And again, I talked about some of the brilliance of Bijan Robinson. There's guys on that side of the ball that just see the game differently, understand route concepts as well as being able to read quarterbacks' eyes. And Watts has a similar feel as Jesse Bates has. And we know how good Bates has been in his career, 27 interceptions, 4 he's taken back for touchdowns. Watts sets the all-time record for Falcon rookies with his 5th interception this last weekend. You got to remember where Watts' background is as far as being able to track the football, too. You know, former wide receiver that went to Notre Dame, they moved him to he was at linebacker for a little bit, then they moved him to safety, and All-American safety his last 2 years at Notre Dame, and with 13 interceptions. And so he's got a great ability to track the football. He's got really good hands. The joke is that a lot of guys play DB because they can't catch the football. Those are frustrated wide receivers. A lot of people joke around about they're great athletes on that side of the ball, but they just don't catch the ball very well. Watts, that's not the case with Watts or Bates. Those are two guys that understand how to track the football, and you could probably put them on the other side of the ball and they could play wide receiver for you as well. But I just think that Jesse really, you know, took a liking to him. He calls him his little brother. And let's not discount what Jerry Gray's meant to him, too. Jerry Gray was a great player for the Rams, was a first-round draft pick, played defensive back. Now, he played corner, but he's a defensive back. And had a chance to talk to Jerry this week about some of the things they did last week, about passing stuff off. They play a match coverage in the back end when they don't jump full man coverage. And those two guys have to really talk. And I thought that Bates and Watts' communication with the back end, even in the linebacker core, talking to the linebackers was exemplary last week, and that's what caused Stafford problems.
All right, Arch, I appreciate it, man. We'll see you on Sunday for it's a hate game, man. You never lost to these guys, did you?
Not as a starter. I sat and watched a couple games, but I didn't lose to them as a starter. So I, but yeah, this is one of those games that if there's one thing, Abe, that I think is undersold in this league is this rivalry. I don't think that, you know, people talk about Bears-Packers or Steelers and the Ravens or whoever you want to, Giants-Eagles, whatever you want to talk about. But I think this one, because in the South, football is king, this rivalry doesn't get enough play in the national football. It came in almost together. One came in 65, one came in 66, got shoved out of the NFC West. And kind of got shoved in the basement of that division, and these two teams have been battling each other for whatever reason. Usually at the bottom of the division, and that's what it is again this year. But these two teams don't like each other, and is a true rivalry. And I think that's what's cool about this one.
All right, Arch, we'll talk to you on Sunday. Appreciate it as always.
See you guys.
All right, that's Dave Archer, brought to you by John Foy and Associates, experienced personal injury attorneys. Get the strong arm. Coming up next, chance to win tickets to the Atlanta Boat Show and a Life of Squid, where I remind you that there is a life for these players off the field, and we got a special story about one Atlanta Falcons player and what he and his wife are going through next. Morning Shift Sports Radio, 910 on the game, and
the Odyssey app.
Here at Blue Apron, we know exactly how hectic school nights can be. That's why we created Assemble and Bake. Delicious one-pan meals that make family dinner simple. Just assemble the pre-chopped ingredients and put the pan in the oven to bake. Then you're free to help out with that last-minute diorama. Shop Assemble and Bake at BlueApron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit BlueApron.com/terms for more.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
8:43 on a Friday morning. This is the Morning Shift. I am Bo Morgan. He is Abraham Abe Gordon. And It's January. Happy New Year, January 2nd. And you know what? Let me give you a way to win a prize in this new year.
Just a belated Christmas gift. That's all.
Yeah, sure. Okay. That's one way to look at it. You want a boat? You want to go to the boat show? Call us right now at 404-726-0929 to get a chance to win a four-pack of tickets to the Discover Boating Atlanta Boat Show in partnership with Progressive Insurance at the Georgia World Congress Center from January 8th through 11th. These tickets are provided by the Discover Boating Atlanta Boat Show in partnership with Progressive Insurance. You'll automatically qualify for the January 8th Cornhole Tournament for a chance to win tickets to the big game on January 9th. To purchase these tickets, go to AtlantaBoatShow.com, or if you want a chance to win right now, call 404-726-0929. Be caller number, let's see, six. Call number six. How about that? How about that? We'll do call number six. All right. Well, Garrett's filling your calls. You guys are calling in. Abe, let's talk about Falcons Saints one more time. We just talked to Arch. He talked about the rivalry that it is. Where would you rank this rivalry in NFL? Now, look, take your Falcon. I don't even know if I'd call you a fan at times, but take your Falcon.
I'm sorry. Hold on. I'm sorry. What?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know where your fandom lies sometimes with the Falcons.
What's wrong with you?
Where do you rank it? Take your fandom aside. I kid, obviously, but take your fandom out of it. And where do you think this ranks in the rivalries? Because everything in the NFC East is a rivalry, right? It feels like Washington-Dallas, Washington-Philly, New York-Washington, you know, Philly-New York, Philly-Dallas. Like, all those seem to be rivalries in some way. The Steelers and the Browns, the Steelers and the Ravens, Ravens and the Browns to an extent. But this one, to me, is up there. I absolutely feel like it's up there. And I think it's top 10 easily. I think it's top five.
So what? I think the question that you have to answer first is what holds it back from being viewed differently? Is it the history of these two teams? Is it how often this rivalry game is meaningful to playoffs?
That's it. I think it's both. You said the same thing in different ways. Had these two teams historically been better through the entirety of the 60 and then soon to be 60 and 59 years or in the league or whatever,
right?
I would tell you that it would probably mean it would be considered to mean more.
I mean, look, just without
also they're not heritage teams.
Without going year by year, the Falcons within the NFL have been largely irrelevant 80% of their seasons, right? I'm not going record year by year, but I mean,
I would say it's fair, yes.
And in the years in which they were relevant, were the Saints relevant? They weren't, neither of these teams have been relevant year by year, just consistently for 50 years.
Well, and some of the great matchups. One of them was when we played the Saints in a playoff game in New Orleans, remember?
Yes.
And then you look at, you had the Vic Aaron Brooks matchups. When Bobby was here playing his old team in the Saints, those were kind of magical is kind of probably maybe an overuse of a word, but you could so there. But then the Matt Ryan, Drew Brees era.
Yes.
It was absolutely, which
you
really
probably have
started,
what, a 6-year stretch there where 12 games
I would say
meant something.
I would say more. Maybe
it was more.
I would say starting in, remember Katrina changed the matchup where it felt like the Saints kind of grabbed a hold of a little bit, and you lead that. I think that's like 43-42 or something like that. It's that the Falcons own one more game in this rivalry than the Saints. But yeah, from Matt Ryan's rookie year on, this matchup and it just felt like it meant more.
Yeah, it did, and because both teams are relevant, pushing for playoff spots, and making those arguments, I just think there were too many years where they weren't, and I think on a given year, you look at dynasties or legacies, and some of those other rivalries have that. I'll be honest. Like, when I lived in Cleveland, the Cleveland and the Steeler was a big deal. But you kind of look at it from here, and it's like, I don't know. Like, how much does this game really matter? Black and blue division, all that nonsense. That's not a great rivalry from a national perspective. And I think what you're looking for is from the national perspective. The other aspect I think that probably hurts the Falcons Saints and helps some of those NFC East rivalries that you talked about, how often are they nationally televised? How often do people actually see this rivalry?
No, I think that's a solid point. And that's part of the reasons, like Arch said, it gets overlooked. Because Arch brought it up, he thought this is an overlooked rivalry in the NFL. I think that's part of it. It's it has, and we did have an era where this was this thing decided the South. It decided the NFC South. And it's not been as much the last couple of years in that aspect, but
well, let's talk about what Sunday specifically decides. And I don't mean standings. And
The division.
Yes, to an extent, possibly the division, all that stuff. For the Saints, have you seen enough win or lose Sunday from Tyler Shuck that he's QB1 next year and they're not attacking a quarterback in the draft?
Yes.
I think I have.
I do, and it's for multiple reasons. Remember, this isn't a guy that Kellen Moore was hamstrung with. This is a guy that he clearly had influence on coming to New Orleans that they took in the second round that he wanted, right? And look, Tyler Shuck is he's 5-3 in his 8 starts.
And most of those games, I would say, were surprise wins.
Well, let's look at it. He has a win. His first start was a loss to the Rams, a win in Carolina, a loss to us in New Orleans. He lost to Miami, and then a win over Tampa in Tampa.
That's a surprise.
Yep, another win over Carolina. So I would say 3 surprises.
Yeah,
and then they beat the Jets and had to come from behind to beat the Titans.
Well, the Jets are a good team. I mean, they took it to Atlanta, so.
And we've gotten along for
Miami
2 hours.
Miami too.
In 50 minutes. Are we going to do this now?
So what's at stake here for Atlanta? You and I both agree the result of Week 18 is not the determining factor on the future of Terry, Raheem, whatever.
I heard Carl and Mike were talking about something similar the other day. And Carl's like, I don't believe in momentum to finish a season. But
Randy told me that he doesn't believe it carries over either, year to year.
I see truth in that, and I hear it, but I do believe that winning games for players is important, and seeing what you put in and building, you know, that confidence as you hitting the off season on a solid note and being, you know, not feeling. Everybody talks about, well, I like it when I have a bad taste in my mouth, it gives me to be motivated. Well, not everybody works that way, especially the younger generations. They want to see the fruit of their work, right? Pay off. They want to see the benefit of hard work. And so seeing that and using that as a tool, and I think it's also important to learn how to win games. And there's a lot of young players on this team.
I do think learning how to win games is important from the player perspective. I don't think it's a reason to save a coach's job. And for me, the one...
Two different conversations.
I agree. The one thing that I think you're asking yourself, and let's just for now say they beat the Saints, they end the season 4-0, right? Are 4 games enough to override where we were through 14 weeks? And I think that's the discussion and the decision that has to be had.
It's not. I'll say this, and then I want to ask you one real quick question, and then we'll get to Life Squid. It's never about this 4 weeks compared to the other 14. You have, if you're an owner, or if you're a decision maker on an NFL team, it's a totality. Because it's not like you're playing, it's not like you played an NFL schedule the first 14 weeks and played the MAC the last 4, okay? It's a totality and how, and all of the things in there go in. What do the Falcons do to win this game, though, on Sunday? Like, what is their X, if you had to say an X factor?
I think they affect Tyler Shuck, who doesn't have a security blanket in Chris Olave. And I think him dealing with the blood clot, while it's unfortunate for him, at this point in the season does work out in the favor of the Atlanta Falcons. They just got after Matt Stafford, who was having an MVP level of season and impacted him with pressure and the secondary. I think you can do that against Tyler Shuck as well, especially when he's down a receiver.
Yeah, I would just say control the ball. Just do what you do, grind it out and control the ball and come out of there with a win. All right, let's hit Life Squid. All right, real quick, anybody can answer this. Even you, Garrett. That means anybody because you're part of this. Do you know who Liam McCullough is?
Yeah.
Tell me who he is.
The Falcons long snapper?
That's right. Falcons long snapper since they got rid of Josh Harris. Tweeted yesterday. Now, one of the things you get to know about when you're on the team is you're around people and you know conversations. And I knew that he and his wife during the year were pregnant and that they were going to have a kid during the season. I also knew they had the kid and that there was special circumstances with this child. Yesterday, he replied to a tweet about someone talking about how you're miserable if you have kids. I'm going a little bit dad mode on you. And about how all our friends that have kids are miserable. And he replied with what I thought was an insight of what NFL players go through during a season. He replied to this and says, my daughter is 7 weeks old. She had life-saving surgery day one of life. I spent 2 weeks standing over her bassinet in the NICU, and that's the newborn intensive care unit, crying in the middle of the night asking God why it's happening to my daughter and begging for the strength to preserve while working 7 days a week in the middle of an NFL season. Wife and I haven't slept more than 4 hours a night since November. Last night while holding her at 2 a.m., she briefly stopped screaming and made eye contact with me and smiled for the first time. No amount of success, money, fame, worldly reward has even sniffed the amount of purpose and fulfillment that single moment brought me. Now, if you have kids, which I know you guys don't, but Garrett, I think, and maybe even you, Abe, will want that at one point in your time. I'm not trying to put words in your mouth or take them out. It is special when your child smiles at you. It's different, man. It's a weird moment. It's to explain, but it's really heartwarming and special, and it is fulfilling very much. I can't imagine what he's going through. I have an 8-month-old who's healthy, to my knowledge. And, you know, haven't found anything. But to have to go through all the things he has. And by the way, we've been on the road 6 of the last 9 weeks in this NFL season. And a lot of that was since the birth of his child. What a cool moment for him to go through that. What a rough stretch and what a hard thing to deal with. But I appreciate Liam McCullough putting that out there because it's cool to know that we're all going through something, including these guys. So when those guys maybe have moments where they just whiff, I know they're paid a lot of money, and I know we expect a lot of them, but just remember, they're human too, and they're dealing with stuff too. And I appreciate Liam McCullough sharing that with us. Hey, I appreciate you, man, for filling in with me today. I had a lot of fun. I don't think people think you and I can coexist, but we actually have fun together when we do shows.
We do. We absolutely
do. So thank you to you, and thank you to Garrett for filling in. We will talk to you Monday, hopefully, after a Falcons win. But if not, we'll talk, you know, either way, we'll talk to you Monday morning at 6 a.m. And until then, Atlanta, you can.
Stay cool, Atlanta, something like that. Is that how it goes?
That works, my friend. Thank you, Abe.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.